This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Why does the Kansas City region fail to qualify for significant federal dollars for most large rail projects, including going to the airport? Why can't Kansas City pay for most big rail projects by itself? What should we do to change the situation? A dose of reality, challenges and pain for rail transit in the Kansas City region. I'm Janet Rogers, co-founder of Transit Action Network, and today's Transit Talk is with Mark McDowell, a specialist in finance, a long-term transit advocate, works closely with Transit Action Network, and founding member and past chair of the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance, and Dick Gerald, vice president of regional planning and development at KCATA, and former regional engineer for the Federal Transit Administration during the design and construction of the St. Louis Metrolink project. Welcome to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI. November 4th election in Kansas City has two questions as a result of a petition to put another Clay Chastain transit plan to vote. 0.25% capital improvement sales tax and separately a 1/8% public transportation sales tax. If the questions pass, the city does not have to build any of the Chastain plan, and the ballot language does not commit the city to any transit improvements. As a result, there isn't really a transit vote on November 4th, but rather questions that provide the city with new revenue and few strings. Mayor James and Clay Chastain have both come out against these ballot measures. Although there isn't a transit question on the ballot this election, it suggested to me that it was time to have some straight talk about challenges in funding rail transit in the Kansas City region. And I see there's two major problems. One is getting federal money, and the other one's getting local funding. Dick, rail projects are really expensive, so most cities want and need federal money to help build them. Is federal money harder to get since you worked on the St. Louis Metrolink?
Yes, Janet, the federal funding is certainly more difficult to obtain today than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, when the St. Louis Light Rail Project was initiated, a lot of projects were getting 80% federal funding. Today, the federal share is 50% or less of most large rail projects in the country.
Well, how do they get most of that money? There's a federal grant program, isn't there? Could you explain that?
Yeah, the USDOT, through the Federal Transit Administration, has a program they call New Starts. And it is a large discretionary program at the federal level. And I say discretionary, but it really is a competitive program that is basically extremely popular, and there's much more demand for the funds than there are funds available. Because of that, the Federal Transit Administration has put in place a series of criteria and a process that they use to evaluate projects. So everyone that would like to get New Starts funding from the FTA has to rate their project, evaluate it, and submit that information to the Federal Transit Administration so they can decide if, in their opinion, the project is worthy of funding.
Now, there's six criteria that they have to meet to do that, right?
There are a number of different criteria that have to be met and have to be addressed in the submission to the FTA. And they really fall into two broad categories. One is financial, and the other is project justification. And the project justification piece really is what are the benefits of the project and what are the costs of getting those benefits. And one of the most significant components of that justification piece is what is the ridership that would be derived from the project and what will it cost to get that ridership on the project. And that's a big challenge, especially for communities like Kansas City, where perhaps we don't have the density or the transit history as some other cities do.
Now, they call that a cost-effectiveness number, right? That's cost per rider is probably the most important one.
Yes, there's a cost-effectiveness number, which is really that cost per trip. There's another one that's very similar to that, which is the economic development potential. But both of those really look at how much ridership and usage will you get from your transit system. Ridership really looks at what's the density, what's the catchment area for the project, who is likely to ride and how far will they ride. So one of the keys to getting good, strong ridership is obviously density of population and density of employment around the corridor.
So if the FTA is looking at things like a cost per rider number and cost for streetcars are, what, about $50 million a mile, and light rails maybe $60 to $70 million a mile, that's pretty much the same everywhere, right?
That's the general rule of thumb today, yes.
Okay, so the difference between communities for the kind of number that they get is the denominator. It's going to be the ridership number.
Correct.
And so if Kansas City struggles to get good cost per rider numbers, don't they? And what do you think that is?
Well, Kansas City has some corridors that are very good corridors for rail, and that actually would fare very well, we believe, in terms of the federal criteria. There are also others that, because there is low density in the corridor, they would not fare as well. And particularly when you're talking light rail, you really want to go a longer distance. And in Kansas City, one of the things you find is, soon as you start leaving the urban area, the downtown area, density decreases. And so you get a reduction in that cost effectiveness number because of lower density areas in the suburban parts of our community. But we do have some strong corridors in the core, and I think you saw three of those in the recent streetcar extension plan, that actually, in my opinion, would fare very well in the federal criteria because they have both population and employment density and good potential for economic development as well.
Yeah, and I believe those three corridors all had really good cost-effectiveness numbers, which for the feds, I believe right now, you have to have a medium rating in order to get a good cost-effectiveness number, and that's under $10 per rider per year. That's one of the only numbers you need to remember. And they all had under $10, those three. So I thought they were all really good. But when you do something like going out to the airport, then you don't have that kind of numbers. The numbers are really, really bad.
Well, the airport is a different challenge for a number of factors. One is it is a long distance away from downtown. That's a long trip, and obviously if you're going to take a long trip, you want to be able to do that with good time savings. You want to do it quickly. So you need basically a dedicated high-speed system, which means you also need a corridor. So you're a long distance, we need a corridor to put it in. We also have an issue of the river crossing. And between here and the airport, we don't have the densities that we do in the older parts of the community south of the river. All of those factors go into play to, when you look at the airport, it's a high-cost endeavor to get light rail to the airport. And the ridership is not as strong as it would be in other parts of the community where we have more density.
Yeah, so I think when they've looked at it before, the number is so high they would not come close to get a medium rating.
Yes, I think today it would be very difficult to qualify a rail line to the airport for federal funding.
Yeah, I do too, and I think that's a real problem. So are there any other corridors that you think would be good for getting rail projects that would qualify in terms of this cost per rider number to get a medium rating?
I think there's several. I think we looked at three with the streetcar extensions. I think those corridors, Independence Avenue, the Linwood Corridor, Main Street to the UMKC area, all are good, strong corridors that could qualify. I think there's some others as well. You could think about going over into the Kansas side and Wyandotte County, downtown KCK, potentially some even further beyond the limits that they looked at with the streetcar extensions. Those corridors, a number of them were built around streetcars 100 years ago. And the density and the development that's there today really is very much related and supportive of a new transit development along the lines of a streetcar or light rail. So I think we do have corridors that could qualify for federal funding.
I think we also have a problem with the commuter rail corridors we looked at a couple of years ago, because the ridership numbers on those were really low, and it looked like they wouldn't qualify for federal funding for a medium rating either.
I think we have some similar issues on commuter rail that we do with going to the airport because of the distances that have to be traveled and the speeds that need to be achieved to attract ridership. I think one of the issues with commuter rail was we're looking at the models that were used to generate ridership numbers. I think many of us believe that the numbers generated were too low. We think that people would actually have chosen commuter rail if the option was there and was a good option that connected with a downtown streetcar, but the models used didn't really reflect that. So the numbers were lower than many of us thought they should be, which pushed them into the area where it would be very difficult to qualify for federal funding.
Yeah, but I looked at those numbers, and the cost per rider numbers were so high. I think the I-70 route was about $40 per rider. So even if you doubled the ridership, you're still a long way from getting down to that medium rating of $10.
Well, there are challenges, and those are challenges today. And that's not to say things could not change in the future, either from the federal criteria standpoint or even from the way we develop in the future. And, of course, in the I-70 corridor, one of the key factors is we're competing against automobiles on I-70, and congestion is a big determinant of the decision to ride rail versus drive in the corridor. So we have to look at that and see what's going to happen there in the future as well.
Mark, did you have some more to add about ridership numbers?
Well, I think ridership numbers are key, both in terms of federal funding, and I guess we'll get into this later, from the standpoint of raising revenue to fund the local match, which is an essential component of obtaining federal funds.
Now, there is another source of federal money that is not as big. It's the Tiger Grants. And how do they come into play with this?
Well, the Tiger program is a discretionary program at the U.S. DOT level. The New Starts program for transit is strictly the Federal Transit Administration. So when you're looking for New Starts, you're competing only with transit projects. The Tiger funding, which is a significantly smaller pool of money than the New Starts, you're also competing with highway projects because that's a multimodal pot. And it's very difficult to get large grants from Tiger. Kansas City was very fortunate in getting $20 million out of the Tiger program for the downtown streetcar. That was one of the largest allocations in the country out of Tiger, and that's probably the maximum amount you might be able to get out of Tiger, might be a $20 million allocation. That really doesn't cut it in terms of your meeting your true financial needs when you're talking a $1 billion light rail project, for instance. You need a lot more than $20 million.
It's a lot different. People need to make sure that when they're hearing about getting federal funding, that they're clear whether they're talking about Tiger Grants, which is going to be about $20 million, no matter what the size of the project is, versus a New Start grant, where you're talking about maybe half the money. So if you have a $1 billion project, you're looking at $500,000. That's a lot different than just $20
million. Exactly. Or the streetcar extensions, looking for a couple of $100 million from the Federal New Starts program to help with those three extensions. You're not going to get that from the Tiger program.
Okay, you are listening to Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I am Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network. You can find us at transactionkc.com, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. I'm speaking with finance specialist and long-term transit advocate Mark McDowell and Dick Gerald of KCATA and formerly an engineer at the FTA. If we look at the second problem for paying for rail projects, it has to do with getting local money. Mark, with your expertise in finance, I know you've looked a lot at funding rail projects over a long time. What is Kansas City's major challenge in coming up with local funding?
Well, basically, Janet, it's, as Dick says, it's population density. But the question is, how does that relate to the ability to finance a project? And I think the way to get started answering that question is to note that the Mid-America Regional Council has done surveys of the area population, and 70% of the population says they want more transit. Additionally, 70% of the population says they are willing to pay for more transit through taxes. So here's the question that practical, financial, and political people need to ask is, why then over the last 50 years, 40 to 50 years, have we had only one ballot measure out of 10 succeed? Not only that, but many of those that failed went down ignominiously, like the last one with a 60 to 40% against additional funding. And it goes to this issue of density. When you ask people if they want transit, and 70% say they do, they're thinking transit is going to come to their neighborhood, maybe a couple blocks away. But then, in reality, these rail projects are so expensive that a citywide sales tax generates sufficient funds only for a relatively short distance, say from the plaza to downtown or some such thing. It's actually impossible to fund a long rail system, a light rail system, for example, going to the airport out of funds currently available and authorized for the city to tax. So therefore, the problem is the low density. We have to go so far to reach those people at the periphery of the city and give them rail transit that the cost becomes insurmountable. And on the other hand, when you cut the system back to the relatively small distance you can afford to pay for, then you lose the enthusiasm of voters in the larger area of the city. Now, there's a way around this, and the only successful vote, excluding the vote for the Clay Chastain plan, which erroneously required no tax increase, the only successful vote has been for the downtown streetcar. And it was successful, in my view, precisely for the reason that it was tailored in its size to benefit those in the immediate area. So the people that were voting to tax themselves also were the people that directly benefited from the system being built.
You know, one of the things I think that is important to point out to people when you talk about going to the airport is that would be at least a $1 billion project.
That's right.
You're looking at $60, $70 million a mile. If you look at 17 miles, $60 million, I'm looking at about right at $1 billion. Plus, you have to pay something for fixing up a bridge. You may even have to build a new bridge, depending on what you want to build, because the current bridges might be able to be fixed up for a streetcar for that weight, but if you really put in several cars with light rail, then you have a different issue. Plus, you have to have operating and maintenance funds included. So it's well over $1 million. If you took just $1 million and you looked at the same financing that they did with the North Kansas City streetcar recently, it comes out you need financing about $94 million a year. The citywide, the 3/8 cents tax that's on this election that's coming up, that only generates $27 million a year. We're a little short. You know, you talk about revenue density. You know, if 3/8 of a cent is $27 million a year, and we're looking at trying to pay for projects because we won't get federal funding to help out, so you're going to have to pay the whole thing. How are we going to come up with something like $94 million annually? We can't do it.
Yes, that's another point, and related to, again, to what Dick said, is the further out you go, the less probability it is that you'll get federal funding. So, therefore, the local voter, the taxpayer, is paying the whole cost rather than just part of it. And that really causes the demand for tax revenues to escalate.
You know, you look at something like the downtown streetcar, and it was successful, but it used a totally different taxing model. You know, they decided, one, they wanted to do it quickly, so they didn't go for federal funding, because that is a long, slow process. But it was only 2 miles, and it was going to be a little over $100 million. And they used a transportation development district, which allowed them to, one, have a new taxing source of up to 1 cent, because citywide we don't have 1 cent available. So they had 1 cent sales tax they could use, and they also could put in property taxes, which we've never used before. Now, downtown, that generated a lot of money. The downtown streetcar, the sales tax, and the property tax are generating about the same amount of money if you look at this year's streetcar budget. And that means that those big downtown buildings are helping to subsidize the streetcar quite a bit.
That's right. And that gets to another key point, and that is revenue density is important if you're thinking about transportation development districts. Not only do you need population density, which gives you ridership numbers which help you get federal funds, But you also need revenue density to help pay for the local match. And how does that happen? Well, in areas that have population density, you usually have retail shops, restaurants for people to go to, commercial office buildings in a mixed-use zoning situation. And so, therefore, you tend to have high revenue from those areas, too. Kansas City only has a few pockets of areas where you can get that kind of revenue density. And one of the problems with the last proposal, one of the reasons it did not succeed to extend the streetcar, was because you had to extend the transportation development district boundaries so far that the people on the periphery of the transportation development district didn't get any benefit from the streetcar development. So naturally, they voted against it.
And Janet, if I could add on the downtown streetcar, I think it's important to recognize that there is federal money in the project, but the city didn't look at the traditional New Starts program from the Federal Transit Administration. They looked at some highway funding, what they call Surface Transportation Program funding. They were able to receive money through that program. They looked at CMAQ, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Funding, were able to receive funding from that program, as well as the federal Tiger program. So the reality is there is federal money in the downtown streetcar to the tune of about $36 million, but the city was more creative, a little more forward-thinking than using the simple traditional approach of going through the FTA's New Start process.
Yeah, when I said they didn't get federal money, I was only talking really about the federal New Starts, because that's the one that takes a long time to get to, and you might get 40 or 50% of the money. These other projects or other grants are fantastic, and they have been a great way to help fund the downtown streetcar.
Right.
But they're very small amounts if you're looking at a $1 billion project to the airport.
Exactly.
Yeah, they won't work there. Now, the TDD, that's the problem, back to what Mark was saying with the TDD on the expansion, it was so much bigger than the original one for downtown. Downtown, they were able to look at just a half a mile around the streetcar track, where the streetcar expansion, because of this revenue-generating problem, the TDD was most of the city south of the river, not quite all the way to the east and not quite all the way south. It went down to about Gregory. But huge block of it. And like you said, a lot of the people then weren't going to get much of a benefit from it. And even with calculating half of the money being federal money, because they planned on getting New Start money, and having this big TDD area, they were still coming up a little short of the money. So they were either going to have to fill that gap. It was about $56 million, which they had plans for part of it, maybe down to 30. But they either had to fill that gap or they were going to have to cut miles. And I think that made people a little uneasy, too, because they weren't quite sure what they were going to get for their money. So we've looked at two different ways of problems. We've looked at getting federal money for paying for a lot of the project, and we've looked at generating enough money here in town. So what's our solution? What do we do going forward? How do we do a better job with being able to generate funds for paying for rail? Dick, you want to start?
Well, I'm very optimistic. Despite the recent vote against the streetcar extensions, I think we are on the right track, so to speak, here in Kansas City. The fact that we're having this dialogue today about how we go forward with rail transit is a real positive, something we wouldn't be talking about 10 or 15 years ago. So I think we are moving in the right direction. I think there's several things that need to happen. I'm a believer that what we need is a multimodal transit system, that we need some rail, we need some bus rapid transit, and we need a good bus system. So I think we need to, when we talk about rail, we need to look at rail in the appropriate corridors. And I think we do have some. And I think we have some that would qualify for federal funding. And I think we can come up with the local money. I think we need to continue looking at those corridors that are the best corridors for rail. I think we also need to promote transit-friendly development. I think we need to promote development that has the density of both residential and employment, that's designed appropriately so when you get off of your transit vehicle, you're not walking across a half-mile-long parking lot. And we have a transit-friendly design with these projects as well. And I think there's a change in attitude towards transit in general. We have a generation coming up right now that's much more transit friendly. I look at my two sons, both in their 20s. They are both much more supportive of transit than they are of automobile transportation. And I'm very proud to say my older son was living downtown at the time of the downtown streetcar vote, and having been one of those, was able to vote for it a couple of years ago.
Mark, do you want to mention just quickly a little bit about what the city can do in terms of incentivizing development that would help out with this and zoning?
Yes, well, I totally agree with Dick, number one, that we need to build rail projects where there exists the population density, existing transit use to support good ridership. And secondly, we need to build it where there's the economic base to provide taxes in a transportation development district, such as downtown, to provide funding. And to do that, the city needs to strategically target the areas it wants to put transit, or rail transit in particular that we're talking about today, for mixed-use, higher-density development, and needs to heavily incentivize developers in those corridors to develop properties that are not today at their highest and best use. I think also, as Dick says, we need to think of a multimodal system. Always we should ask ourselves whether rail, which is so much more expensive than bus rapid transit, what, Dick, about 10 times more expensive per mile?
In that range.
If rail is really essential in a particular area, or if a high-level bus rapid transit system would do as well. And finally, if we're going to incentivize large developments outside of these transit corridors that we would like, then we ought to bring transit to those development areas. If we're going to put a lot of development incentives out by the interstates, then we should be talking about how we get transit, even if it's just transit within the boundaries of the development, how we get it out there and serve those developments.
Well, just to summarize, I want to say that no matter how much we want to have rail, we have to be able to pay for it. Spending our time on wishful projects that people get excited about things we can't pay for may be hurting the development of real transit projects that will benefit the community and fill our transit needs. So hopefully we can move forward in a really positive way, like we've talked about today, with starting to work forward with developing transit corridors and working to incentivize development so that we get more economic development to help raise more funding as well. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network. You can find us at transactionkc.com. I want to thank Mark McDowell and Dick Gerald for speaking with us about the problems of paying for rail in the Kansas City region. Our next Transit Talk is November 18th. Thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activities in our community. If you would like more information, would like to comment, or if you or your organization would like to be interviewed or have ideas for content portions of future broadcast, call Dan Connolly at 816-217-5875.